I'm told I'm an addict. And, thanks for asking me to share tonight. And it was great listening to Isha because I've seen some of your struggles. And always amazes me to see somebody who comes into the rooms very closed and stuff like I was, and suddenly opening up and, you know, becoming a delightful young woman, you know, in a sense of the way, the outlook you have and looking at yourself and not blaming others all the time. And that's very different from, you know, the way I used to be. A couple of months ago, I had a friend of mine came from Greece, and we used to use together, and we're both in recovery. And he used to say that even as a using addict, I was a lot more closed and a lot more paranoid than everybody else he ever knew. And so you can imagine when I found Narcotics Anonymous, and one of my first meetings were at the church next door in the basement. And I walked down the basement, and there was that kind of damp and darkness in that room. And there were three or four people, and two of them had suits on. And I sat in there, and I thought, how can possibly this thing help me stay clean? And in recovery, I spent many years and many nights on my own thinking, this is not going to work. This cannot possibly work for anybody like me. I'm really glad to say that since that first meeting I went to, I've never had to use again. And I'm not saying that that's, you know, I'm cleverer than anybody else, or I think I was lucky in some times, because a couple of times I really wanted to score and, you know, things happened and stopped me. And on the other hand, I think it's a blessing. It's, you know, I use the term God's grace a bit loosely because I'm not quite sure what, you know, God is and whether I believe in it or don't. And I felt it that there was a time when, you know, I went up to King's Cross and I went to school. And you said, you mentioned the word petty in your, you know, when you're sharing. And what happened to me that night, I used to share a flat with somebody, with a woman in NA in Notting Hill. And she had a new boyfriend, and they were at home. And I liked the guy, you know, he was quite, you know, decent bloke. And one night I came in, and they were sitting on the sofa, and they were kissing or whatever. So I said, hi there, and they both ignored me. And immediately the self-pity and the anger that kicked off in me made me want to use. And looking back now, I can see how hypersensitive and how petty that was, really. But for me, it felt very real. It felt that, what's the point in staying clean if people who I think are my friends, you know, don't acknowledge me? And I went to King's Cross, and there was this guy. I'm just trying to find somebody, and I bumped into this guy from NA. And he said, oh, hi, Tolly. He said, would you do the chair tonight? I said, you must be joking. I just come here to score. He said, fantastic message, he said. You know, you come to score, and you end up doing the chair. And I end up doing the chair, and I end up staying clean. And a couple of weeks ago, Paul did the chair here, and he was talking about sort of long hair and rock and roll and dingwalls. And there was a part of me that really missed that, you know. And my using was a bit like that without the fun. It was more hanging around those places, but trying to score all the time and never having enough. Paul mentioned something about buying really cheap beer and having 20 of those on the shelf, you know, and I thought, God, you know, that must have been good times for him. And you know, the closest I ever came to it, it was, you know, when I stole some gear from the Athenian Greek Hells Angels, and they were chasing me on their Harleys, and they had one of those little C90s, you know, the pizza delivery bikes, and they were chasing me around the old town, you know, to catch me, and I was going on the pavements, you know, so they wouldn't catch me, and through the squares, and I escaped finally, and and years later, I went to Lesbos, the Greek island, and one of them was there, and a close friend of mine was helping him detox. And I suppose there was some kind of amends that I saw in the whole process that, you know, I tried to help him and tell him about Narcotics Anonymous and all that stuff, and unfortunately he wasn't interested, and that's all I can do is, you know, sometimes tell people about it, invite them, be friendly, but more than that I cannot do. I cannot carry the addict. I've learned that. I've learned that the hard way. And my using story was quite brief compared to some others. It was quite damaging compared to some others. But it was my story. I started using, you know, when I was 17 and stopped when I was 25. I was mainly a heroin addict. And in those brief years, you know, I've done a lot of damage to myself. You know, physically, I still live with a lot of that damage. And and I have a bad liver, and the other day I went to the hospital, and what they do, once a year, they put a camera down me to check, you know, how the different veins are doing within the esophagus. And the doctor said that they were better than last year, and she said she's never seen that before in anybody. She's been doing endoscopies for the last 10 years, and she's never seen that. And I walked out of the hospital, and it's the same hospital that I felt desperate a lot of the times. Leaving that hospital, I went through interferon treatment twice, you know, and I felt quite desperate certain times. But on that day, I left the hospital and I felt very happy. I felt very happy because I have a chance to live a bit longer. And on the other hand, I felt very grateful to NA. I felt very grateful because if it wasn't for Narcotics Anonymous, I would never be able to look after myself. I would never be able to stay clean. I would never be able to, you know, be receptive to things that I hear in these rooms. And a few weeks ago, I remember when people share something and spark something in me, I hold on to it. And somebody shared that he's very careful what he puts in his body, in his mind, and in his heart. And that was very important because I heard it and I thought at the time, I don't do that. A lot of the times, you know, my food, okay, I try, but I'm not that, you know, fanatic about it. Sometimes at night I sit down and I watch, you know, CSI crime investigation, you know, with all the nutters from New York or Miami, rather than read something which is good for my spirit. And I know, you know, things like having a sponsor and spending time with him really makes my sort of gives me a sense of direction in my life, and I can appraise what I do right and what I don't do right. And I don't do it as often as I should. I know where he is every Thursday night and every Monday night. I can go in there and hook with him. But, you know, I think, oh, I'm tired, you know, go home, watch a movie, you know, read a book. so from that guy who was 25 years old and came to Narcotics Anonymous, my life has changed a lot. For one, I grew older. And that's, you know, I shared once that, you know, cleaning up young is a blessing. And somebody shared back that even cleaning up old is a blessing. And they were right. And they were right. And this evening, I got a phone call from the woman I was with while I was using. And a lot of things happened. You know, she found me with overdoses, and, you know, she got pregnant once, and we had an abortion. And she called me, and she said that she just had a baby, and she had a daughter, and she will name her after my mom, because, you know, my mom was always so really good to her and stuff. And somehow it threw me, because I remembered back the way I was, you know, when the abortion happened, the only thing I wanted to do is go back home and score. I had no experience of any feeling of loss or, you know, what I was doing. I was thinking, oh, whew, that was a narrow escape. That's all I thought. And over the years in my recovery, I tried to have children, and that hasn't worked out, you know, haven't been blessed with children. And sometimes these things play in my mind. But what I've known is that there must be a reason for that. There must be a reason, and there must be a lesson, and there must be something that it can turn into positive. Because in my experience, you know, I find that in Narcotics Anonymous, a strange alchemy. All the bad things, all the difficult things, all the things that I suffered from, somehow turn into gold when I share them with somebody else. And that's amazing. Many times, you know, I share the problems, you know, with my health with people and in the rooms. And even my sponsor is 76 years old, and he has problem with his heart. And he rings me. Sometimes he says, my spirit feels weak today. And I know what he means. And it doesn't have to be a health problem. For me, it could be, you know, I don't know, something simpler than that, something petty, like, you know, Isha said, it can make my spirit be weak. And last Friday night, I went to the airport. I didn't go. I was due to fly, and as always, I overestimated my ability to get there on time, last minute, and I turned up at Gatwick, and the check-in had closed. So I'm kicking a fuss, and I really lost it, you know. So fighting the immigration officers who wouldn't let me go through, I scream and shout, I lied blindly that, you know, I've got a funeral to attend. I try to pull every string, you know. They wouldn't have any of it. So I lost the flight. So I was going to fly the next morning then. So I went to book a flight through the internet. I booked the wrong bloody date and paid for it. Then I booked the right flight, and I booked a hotel to go and stay in Gatwick. And then I flew the next day. By that time, I had lost it. And I arrived in Greece, and I just turned up at my girlfriend's house, and I don't know, I came out with such rubbish, you know. And she took it very well, and she didn't say much. She knew I was out of control, and that's... The next day, I woke up and I prayed a bit, and, you know, I meditate for 3.3 minutes, you know, in the morning, and I just felt a little bit balanced again, and I said, I'm sorry, you know, that for what I said and all that stuff. And and she was all right with it, but what I've realized is how easy it's for me to get out of control. How easy my life can become unmanageable, and then I feel that I'm at war with the world. And if I don't have a program and Narcotics Anonymous and a sponsor, I can lose all that very easy, very easy. I can go into a land where everybody's against me, where I don't like anybody, and that people are enemies. And that's part of my meditation, not to see other people as enemies, and try, you know, and bring some, you know, loving thoughts towards everybody. And would I do that if I didn't have Narcotics Anonymous? No. Another thing that has happened to me in recovery is that I've made a lot of big mistakes. I've made a lot of big mistakes, and I felt that I should run away and hide. I should run away, and I don't deserve recovery. I have to punish myself. One of my really strong instincts is self-destruction. I had it when I was using too. I remember one night I was using, and I was working with my father. My father had a small hotel, and I used to look after the hotel during the night, and he looked after the hotel during the day. And one day, you know, I couldn't score, things were running a bit late, so I turned up a couple of hours late, and I could see the despair in my father's face, you know. And I had some Coke that day, not very often, you know, because was expensive, it didn't last very long, so I wasn't that interested. And I remember he came up about 8 o'clock in the morning. He slept in the basement. He came up and he could see me fixing with a 5 mL syringe, fixing the Coke, and the blood was pouring from my arm. And I remember it's the first time my dad is, you know, a typical, you know, great guy, you know, big mustache and quite strong and, you know, forceful. And he just held his head like this and started crying. And he said to me, just tell me, where have I gone wrong? And this is the guy that worked all his life up to the age of 73 to support his family. And obviously I blamed him for everything, because that's what as an addict do. But now looking back, as a clean recovering addict, I could see the hopelessness I had in me. I could see the complete darkness that my life was all about. And that was the good days, you know, that I had at least some stuff. I had some gear. I went to prison twice, and the first time I was in prison, I swore that I'm not gonna use drugs anymore. And I didn't use in prison. And I came out, and within 3 days I was using again. I tried to clean up, and I went to the caves in a Greek island, and I stayed there. And I was sick. I was so sick I couldn't get down from the caves to go and eat. So, you know, others had to feed me and go and bring stuff. And what happened is I swore again I'm not going to use. And that happened again and again and again. And every time my commitment to giving up became weaker and weaker and weaker. And in the end, my dream was to get enough money to go and die in India peacefully. That was my dream. If you ask me, if the fairy would come down and say, what would you like, Tolis? Anything you want. I'd say, give me $3,000 because I want to go to India and die. And it's sad. It's sad for a young man to think that way. And as I said, I've made a lot of mistakes in my recovery, and that's where I felt the love and care and support of those meetings. One of my sayings is, if this program works, I need it to work when the shit hits the fan. But also, what I forget to say, that I have some responsibility to then. I have a responsibility to be honest, to take it on the chin, and move forward. And move forward means look at my behavior, make some amends, and, you know, let go of it. Let go of it, because my first sponsor always used to say, guilt and pride is the same thing, it's the same coin, two different sides. And when I feel guilty, I become self-destructive, because I hate myself. I don't like myself. Well, when I feel happy and when I feel content, I can give and I can be friendly and I can be supportive to other people. So my responsibility is to feel content and happy. And it's simple. It's by trying to apply these principles, you know, in my life. And also my sponsor used to say, six things, you know, will keep you clean and will keep you grateful. Read the book, speak to the newcomer, you know, have a sponsor, work the steps, so on and so forth. And I don't believe it. I mean, naturally, I think that's, you only say that, it's the party line. So, but I know that when I practice that, it works. So I'm a little bit puzzled there, because, you know, for years I tried to prove my sponsors wrong. Things they say, my sponsor would say things like, honesty is the best policy. Yes, but my instinct says, you know, if I don't say anything, it would be better because then I have the back door open and, you know, all that stuff. And I find that when I listen and when I, there's something that maybe doesn't say in the NA literature, but it says it in other spiritual books and talks about submission. Submission into a sort of power greater than myself, into somebody else, in the advice of somebody else, in the guidance of somebody else. And I found that to be a crucial thing at certain times of my recovery. Not my instinct, but listen to somebody else, somebody I trust and value, and somebody who I know has my best interests at heart. And I have a lot of fears about the future, you know, in a daily basis. Fears about my work, fears about my health, fears about getting old, fears about not being able to achieve some of my goals and some of my dreams. And what I do is I try and look at what has happened up to now. I was 8 years clean when I was diagnosed with cirrhosis of the liver, and I thought my life is over. And I remember walking down Hampstead High Street, and I had tears in my eyes. And it wasn't tears of fear or pain or whatever. It was tears of gratitude. And I was thinking, my life is over. At least I had 8 good years in recovery. Now I'm 23 years clean and think I'm going to die tomorrow. So that's the kind of madman I am. And I always felt that my, you know, I'm doing a job that it's a bit dry, it's management, it's, you know, I want to be more creative and stuff. And I remember talking to my sponsor about it and said to me, why aren't you? Who's stopping you? And, you know, over the time I've been painting, I've been writing poems, I've wrote a play, you know, I try and in some ways find all the things that I always wanted to do And I always thought one day I'll do them. There is no one day. Just get on and do it. Nobody's stopping me. Okay, there are some limits. You know, I work full time and I, you know, I cannot just get on a boat and go to South America and live there forever. You know, I can't do that. But I can travel there. And, you know, I've been very, very fortunate like this, that I've traveled to far-flung places and I you know, in some there are some moments that it really hit me, you know, being in places, South Africa or Brazil or in the top of Himalayas. I was in 5,500 meters high. I couldn't breathe, I couldn't move, and I felt sick, but I was so bloody happy because it was a dream of mine. And I, you know, and those would never have been done without, first of all, I think, being clean, but also other people do it, and I think, why not me? I have friends who we grew up together, and they have the same dreams, but they never left Athens because they don't see it as possible in some ways. Where in Narcotics Anonymous, I saw a lot of things possible because other people did it. They went to college, they went, they studied, they got employment, they had a family. And I, one of the big things for me has always been H&I, hospitals and institutions, going to into a detox and taking a meeting or a prison. And I always say that, I don't know if it's 100% true, but I say it anyway, because I've never seen anybody who's doing that and has used. Because I cannot see myself going into a detox and seeing people in there broken, scared, sick physically, and then I can go out and think, I can have one or two or three and then I'll be all right. I cannot do that. It just doesn't, that doesn't even cross my mind. And the funny thing is that every time I'm due to go in there, I only do it once a month. You know, I don't want to do it Sunday afternoon and I want to chill out, watch a television and eat, you know, a mountain of food and snore for the rest of the afternoon. But I go in there because I know it keeps me clean. And people trying to fight me to let go of commitments, I won't have it. I won't have it. It's my insurance. And I'm not saying that that's, now for me it's a little bit like an automatic pilot. I know I go in there, I've got hearing aids in both ears, so half of the things that people say, I miss it anyway. But I can see it in their faces, and I can see the despair and the flicker of hope sometimes, a flicker of hope. This friend of mine from Greece came, asked, I asked him to do the chair with me. So in his broken English, he did it, and he said, oh, you know, I probably, nobody understood me and, you know, it was a waste of time for them and all that stuff. And a week ago, I met somebody in the meeting who was in there and said, when you see your friend, tell him I got clean because of him. And that's the alchemy, that wherever we are, whatever, you know, I've gone through, somebody, somewhere gets touched by what I say or what I do. Most of them positively. Some of them, you know, at times, you know, I think I always expected Narcotics Anonymous to be the perfect place full of, you know, deeply spiritual people who are nice all the time. This is not true, but if you think where we all come from, it's a bloody good place. And I don't know how we're doing with time.
10 minutes.
Okay. the journey of recovery of I always felt there is two roads to it. One is the fellowship bit, and one is the personal program. I'm very good at the fellowship bit. I enjoy that one, and I go to lots of meetings. Even, you know, I have to stop myself sometimes going to too many meetings because my house might be a mess, but I think, oh, I'll go to a meeting. I might have, you know, work to do, but I might go to a meeting. You know, I haven't seen, you know, my girlfriend for, you know, a week, but I might go to a meeting, you know. For me, it's easier sometimes. And I enjoy the banter. I enjoy the chairs a lot. And when people share from the heart and they share the truth, I feel it. And that touches me. Touches me, inspires me. And it hasn't got to do with time. It hasn't, because when somebody shares something which is positive and it's warm and it's beautiful, I like it. You know, I like it, and then, you know, I feel drawn to that person. And at times, you know, I felt that we are all the same, and we are all, there is time to take and time to give. About, how long ago was that? 8 years ago, I split up with my wife after 15 years of marriage. We were together for 15 years, and I felt like my world fell apart a bit. It's quite strange because in some ways I always felt really, what's the word, safe with her. And when suddenly that went, my security went as well. And it was funny to feel it, you know, but it wasn't that, you know, funny at the time. And I remember I went to a meeting and I shared what happened, and it was the day that she had packed her things and left. And because I had a few years clean, people in the meeting probably felt intimidated and they didn't say anything, you know, nobody approached me. And I remember leaving the meeting then and thinking, is my support? Is this the people that, you know, supposed to be my friends? I'm not exaggerating, but half of them, I've seen them from day one clean. And the other ones, probably they were, they got clean in other meetings and then came around, you know. And I felt a little bit upset. And I went home and it was dark, and you know, I laid in the sofa, and there was the answering machine was flickering, and there was, you know, I went to the answering machine. There were 7 messages, all from my friends, to see how I was. So it changed my idea about the fellowship, and there was at the time a sponsor of mine who is blessed with extreme sense of humor, very funny. And we spent a bit of time together, and he used to say in his amicable East End accent, you know, it's never over, doll, game is not over. And he kept sort of cheering me up and, you know, cracking jokes, come on, sit down, put your feet up, I'll make you soup, you know, and somehow with, you know, with simple things like that, I felt better. But there was also another part, which is the personal program. And that was about changing the way I my perspective and opening up my heart. And I remember talking to my sponsor and saying, you know, she's gonna leave on Monday, and she's packing her things, and I don't know what to do. I wanna smash the place up. I wanna scream at her. And so he said to me, Tolis, you know, I can understand that, he said, but you have a choice. What kind of man do you want to be? Just think about it, he said. Take 5 minutes out, cool, you know. What kind of man do you want to be? And I thought about it and I thought, well, in my heart of hearts, I knew that it had finished. Many times I wanted to leave myself, I just didn't have the guts to do it. And on the other hand, I knew that she's been a good partner and a good woman, and I loved her. You know, you don't live with somebody for 15 years without loving them. So I thought, no, I want to be a loving man, and I want to be tender and loving and supportive and not supportive, but, you know, loving. And I prayed that day, and always helps me when I have to confront, you know, the demons inside. And I helped her carry the things, and she moved to another flat, which wasn't too far. And when it was time for me to leave her in the flat on her own and go, I just hugged her, and we both burst into tears. And it was, she put it in, you know, really great words afterwards. She said, it's not that the relationship finished, it just changed. And I felt that moment. And that's the kind of, you know, person that Narcotics Anonymous helps me to be. By myself, I'd be so wrapped up in some murderous jealousy that, you know, I think, like, you know, as a man, I ought to be that way, you know. And I'm glad that, you know, there is this program and has sort of somehow put this nutter in some path of, you know, being a bit better for the people around me. So thanks very much for asking me to share, and thanks very much for listening.